Hello, everybody, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 98. I am Buck. You can find TRC at therubberchickensblog.com. You can find us on Twitter at rubberchickens. That's R-U-B-R chickens. You can find us on Instagram. You may know us from our other Twitter accounts. It's Dabo, Gamecock Poetry, co-author of Did the Bunt Work?, and about a dozen other burner accounts that you're probably not aware of. So we have more than likely roasted you at some point and you don't even realize it. Probably our most famous burner account is Jeff Cars. I know that's a little surprising to some of you that we run that account, but we do. No, I'm just kidding. Jeff is a loyal listener, and we appreciate his patronage. And so anyway, joining me tonight is not T-Bone and not G-Man. Unfortunately, T-Bone is dead. I mean, he's not physically dead. He's dead to us. You know, he's basically put his career ahead of podcasting. And then the G-Man may actually be dead. I've been texting him most of the evening and couldn't track him down. But we do have a special guest tonight, and that is Connor Tapp from 24/7 Sports. Connor, welcome back to TRC Unleashed.
Oh, it's great to be here. I've toned down the special guest aspect of it. I'm just a guest.
I don't know. You know, you got this new morning blitz on 24/7 Sports. That's really going pretty well, isn't it?
Yeah. We're trying to do a daily news podcast, college football news, just trying to catch you up on whatever stories you might have missed from the day before or the day of, in just a quick little 15-minute shot there. And I love a podcast that rambles on, as evidenced by my appearance and enjoyment of this one. But I do understand from time to time we just kind of want to get the information out. So kind of hoping to serve those people with this. So if that sounds cool to you, check out my Twitter, my pinned tweet for how to subscribe to that. The Morning Blitz, yeah.
Yeah, and your Twitter account now is Connor Tapp 24/7. Is
that right? I went corporate. I've got the company handle now. After years of obstinate refusal, I've buckled and I've put the company name on my. I think I'm. This was not under pressure from anyone. I think it was just a mental thing for me. I was like spending too much time on Twitter and tweeting too many stupid things. And I was like, if I associate this with my place of employment, perhaps I'll tweet fewer stupid things.
Right.
And I think it's working so far.
No, it's been good. I have enjoyed the Morning Blitz. Is there some stress associated with having to put out a podcast every day?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We do not currently have one in the can for tomorrow, and I'm kind of freaking out about it. So.
And here you are on our podcast. So, if you need a guest for the Morning Blitz to talk about South Carolina football, I'm available. You could actually just repurpose this podcast if you want to.
I might do that.
So anyway, we have not podcast in a long time. So there has been no stress of a daily podcast from TRC. It's more like a yearly podcast, but we've been, we've seen a lot of folks out there, promoting themselves as the greatest Gamecock podcast and the best Gamecock podcast, and there's like 12 Gamecock podcasts out there that are all vying to be the best. And I we're actually combining tonight TRC Unleashed and the Half Cocked Show, which are probably the two best Gamecock podcasts of all time. So we're kind of like the Thanos of podcasts. Now, when we combine efforts.
Yeah, we got to. So, what Infinity Stone is Half Cocked, and what Infinity Stone is TRC? That's the question. And who are the missing pieces to the Infinity Gauntlet? The things we got to figure out.
You're going way too deep for me. my son watches this stuff, and I watch it with him, and he has to explain it to me. I'm assuming that Thanos at some point is going to be defeated.
So you would think
that would mean that a podcast will have to come along at some point to defeat us, but we are not here to break anything down. I'll tell you that we're not breaking anything down. We're here for entertainment value. We're here just to talk about Gamecock football, and the season opened up on Saturday against Coastal Carolina.
Well, hold on there, Buck, because I spent 30 hours in the film room preparing for this podcast.
So you are ready to break it down.
I have been watching the All 22, and I am ready to tell you what the
I actually picked that up from a radio show here in Atlanta in the mornings. One guy, he gets so mad when he hears, he's like, "We're not breaking anything down. We're not breaking it down." You know, so that's kind of where I picked that up from. But so Coastal Carolina on Saturday, I think I had tweeted something or maybe put in one of my Gamecock flashbacks that this was only the third Saturday in the last or since 2005 that we'd opened the season. We'd normally open on Thursday, and we normally open against NC State, East Carolina, North Carolina, Vanderbilt, you know, games that are challenging, I guess, and some would say that Coastal Carolina would normally be challenging for us, but I don't think Saturday could have gone any better, considering our struggles in the past with the Woffords and the Furmans of the world. Western Carolina comes to mind, but to be the first game of the year and come out against Coastal Carolina, which is a team that we've now beaten twice in history, and I think the combined score is like 119-25. You know, maybe that's the team instead of Wofford. We just need to keep scheduling Coastal Carolina. So. Do you agree? I mean, there was really not much stress that came out of that game on Saturday, but besides maybe DJ Wonnum's sprained ankle. That was the only moment of consternation that I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you see a star player go down with an injury in a game that was never really in doubt, that's always tough. And I know they're saying it's just a sprain, and he'll fight through it and play against Georgia, but anytime you're dealing with an injury like that, it's easier than it sounds to play through that. I don't know. As I get old and deal with sprained ankles and this and that all over the place, it's like, man, I don't know how these guys like suffer a severe enough sprain to have to come out of the game and then turn around and do anything the next week, much less compete as a high level athlete. But other than that, not really too much in the way of stress. So it's great to see Debo Samuel back out there making awesome catches and scoring touchdowns. I don't really have any negatives to take out of this. The rushing performance, 6.9 yards per play, which, you know, hey, it's Coastal Carolina, they're a bad team, but that was more than a yard per play better than South Carolina averaged in any game last season. And South Carolina played some bad defenses last season. So for me this year, like, what I'm looking for is, like, how's the offensive line going to hold up? Is it going to give Jake Bentley an opportunity to find some of those weapons he's got at the skill positions? And, you know, not a super dominant performance against Coastal Carolina, but, you know, we could get so into our heads talking about, were we playing close to the vest? Were we saving it for Georgia? Were we doing this? We're doing that. But not super dominant. But I think, you know, overall pleasing, low stress. As you said, we've tended to schedule opponents that give us a bit more of a fight in the opener, especially those Thursday ones. And we're kind of on the big stage as the first game of college football being officially back. And a lot of times we've been kind of struggling to beat East Carolina, I guess outside of that one, we kind of handled East Carolina, but UNC, Vanderbilt, whoever it is. It's weird not being on the Thursday, but I did enjoy being able to coast to a victory over an overmatched foe.
Yeah. The noon game sucked. I mean, I wasn't at the game, but most of the people that were there, it sounded like it was hell on earth. And probably three or four athletic directors ago, you know, somebody said, "Well, we'll never play a September game at Williams-Brice Stadium, you know, before 7 o'clock at night." And obviously, with TV and the way that's all changed, We're kind of at the mercy of our master ESPN, I think, as far as when we get to play. So I wasn't a big fan of the noon. Well, I'm never a fan of the noon start. Definitely not a fan of a noon start when it's 90 plus degrees outside. But again, I was watching on my back deck with a fan on me and an umbrella, so I didn't
There were some takes about the students leaving early. I saw on Twitter. I did not notice this on the TV, but it seems like this comes up every. Once or twice every year, people getting mad at the students for leaving early. And I don't know. I'm a person who thinks like, well, if you've got a group of people behaving the way you don't want them to behave, well, then maybe it's time to reexamine the incentive structure laid before those people rather than being mad at those people.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There's always the obligatory shot from the press box to show how thin the crowd is right before kickoff. And then the TV shots at the end of the game when everybody's left, whether it's a blowout in our favor or not. But we digress. Back to the game. You know, some things that stood out to me. Jake Bentley had a very efficient performance. 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Pretty high completion percentage. We took a couple of deep shots. He missed Debo on one. That was one of the areas of focus that we heard from Brian McClendon and Will Muschamp is we're going to take more chances down the field. I don't think we saw it as much on Saturday. Maybe saving up a little bit of that for Georgia, but the efficiency, short passes, he was checking down, and I personally saw a Jake Bentley that was a lot calmer than he normally is, particularly coming out of the gate. He just has a history of apparently being pretty wound up and overshooting receivers early, and he seemed to be pretty calm. Maybe you chalk that up to the opponent. Maybe you chalk it up to maturity. I certainly hope it's the latter and that we see that against Georgia, although it's probably going to be hard to keep his emotions down coming up this Saturday, but I thought he played a really good game and stayed away from injury, which is a good thing because I don't know if I want any of those other 3 guys to have to come in and play any significant minutes.
That's good to hear about Jake's composure because I was not able to watch the game with that level of detail. We had 3 games on in the office at 24/7 HQ, and my boss is a massive Texas Longhorns fan, and they were in the process of losing to Maryland, and so he was
poor guy
screaming and losing his mind, and it was difficult to concentrate on the South Carolina blowout with that going on. But that's encouraging to see because with Jake, I mean, you know, all the pieces are there physically, and last year you just kind of wondered why it wasn't quite coming together. And, you know, there's some questions about there were some problems with the offensive line last year, which hopefully will be fixed this season or at least improved. And so through game one, it seems like from the stat line and from your testimony, I feel confident with where we're at with Mr. Bentley that we're in for a rebound year in year 3 here.
Yeah, I mean, we can only cross our fingers that, maybe last year was a little bit of a sophomore jinx, but, you know, sophomore jinx is only a sophomore jinx if somebody has a bad sophomore season. So there are plenty of sophomores that have good seasons, but we'll see. We'll see if he turns into the player we hope. Another guy, Rico Dowdle, looked fantastic. He got some pretty rave reviews, too. He looked like he's got a little more pep in his step than he certainly had last year. He looked a little bit more like the guy we saw as a freshman. He actually looked a little, I don't know if smaller is the right word, leaner and a little quicker. So it was good to see him. And on the other side, Tyson Williams looks kind of like a battering ram. He's a pretty stacked dude. And then at the end of the game, I don't know if you got to see Slade Carroll came in. And,
I did not. Slade. I've been marveling at that name in the box score ever since I saw it.
he had quite a performance at the end of the game. So it was interesting to see Slade Carroll, and I'm going to say it like that every time I say his name, to see him come in instead of, you know, one of the freshmen, give him a few snaps. I mean, maybe that's just a reward for how Carroll has been practicing or something, but it was fun. You know, Shai Smith looks really good at the wide receiver position. Ortre got a couple of chances. My man, Keel Pollard had his first touchdown catch, and on the on the defensive side, it's kind of a strange bunch. You know, outside of Wanham, every other part on the defense, you know, except for maybe we got a little more stability at linebacker, maybe, but there just seemed to be a ton of interchangeable parts. You know, T-Bone had texted me. He said, particularly in the defensive backfield, we have a lot of guys who are a lot of different shapes and sizes, but don't have any, you know, at least at this point, the discernible skills to make them a cornerback or a safety or a, you know, Jamias Williams is, you know, 5'8", being generous, you know, 5'8", 200 to 210 pounds playing safety. And then you've got somebody like freshman Israel Mukwamu at 6'4", playing corner. You know, Keyshawn Nixon is kind of a thicker dude playing corner, and I don't. He looks more like a safety physically. So there are a lot of guys out there. I think it may take a few weeks before we get the defensive backfield in particular. Not as worried about the defensive line. I think we've got it pretty figured out there. It's just a matter of the getting some production out of those folks. Nick Harvey, who transferred from Texas A&M, that was a strange one on Saturday because we heard all summer it sounded like he was going to be a first-team corner alongside Rashad Fenton. And then we didn't see him until midway through the second half, late in the second half, and I remember seeing number one running around out there, and I was kind of starting to detach myself from the game a little bit, and I said, man, when did Rico McWilliams get more, you know, get more eligibility? And it took me a while to figure out who that was, and then he got the targeting call and got booted out of the game. So it seems like he's fallen down the depth chart a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what the rotation looks like against Georgia. That's a little bit worrisome.
I missed the it was Harvey that got ejected. So will he miss? Was it in the second half? Will he miss Georgia? Or
he'll miss the first half this week? Ah, I believe is what it is. Yeah,
I missed that.
But he didn't play very much. You know, before the targeting call, I saw Mukwamu and a couple of the other guys out there before I saw Harvey. Now that doesn't mean I wasn't watching every player on every play, but it was a while before I noticed him on the field.
What you briefly mentioned, Jam Williams, he had such an up and down 2017. Did anything about his day stand out to you, positive or negative?
Nothing significant. I mean, the guy, and I worry about him. He plays so hard, and I think his size just hurts him. And I remember I've anybody who follows our Twitter account for the last couple of years knows how much I love Jam Williams and what a fan I am of his. I saw him play at Grayson High School several times his senior year, and he was most impressive when he had the ball in his hands. You know, so he played a little bit of running back. He played a little bit of slot. He was punt returner, kick returner, and he was just electric. And when he played corner, he just wasn't great. You know, when the ball was thrown his way, he didn't have great ball skills, which is why I'm, you know, I guess I wasn't surprised when, you know, they put him at defensive back as a freshman, because they pretty much said that he was going to be a DB from the very beginning, even while they were recruiting him. So I'm not surprised, but I get a little concerned. You know, has he been passed on the depth chart, and what is it about him that is not you know, bringing him to the forefront on the defensive side. Like I said, he plays hard. He's just a smallish guy to be over there getting physical on the defensive side.
I don't think he played very much, but Mr. Modern Southern Style himself, Josh Belk, got into the game after being cleared at the 11th hour before the start of the season. I know it was limited snaps, but any impressions from his debut?
I didn't catch anything live, but a couple of folks posted some videos after the game. I don't know. He probably played less than 10 snaps. I didn't see the participation stats after the game, but my guess is he played probably less than 10 snaps. But there was one particular video where he basically just lifted his guy and pushed him into the backfield and tackled the running back after about a 1 yard gain. So nothing significant. I think the rumors of him being out of shape may be a little bit strong, but I don't think he's ready to take, you know, 30 or 40 snaps a game yet either. So it will be probably later in the season before we see him have any kind of significant impact on the defensive line. But he is a big old boy, that's for sure. One guy that did jump out at me was Kobe Smith on the defensive line. He seemed to be in on a lot of plays and seemed to be really active. But it's kind of a no-name defense. You know, and it'll take some time, you know, for people to really make their mark. But I don't know that outside of Wanham, you know, I don't know that we have any all SEC type performers on that side of the ball, at least this year.
So what you're telling me is then we're in for another year of bend but don't break,
which kills me. Yeah. And they even mentioned that in an article last week. I think they said something about bend but don't break. I'm just like, hey, don't bend. Just don't bend in the first place, and we won't have to torture ourselves going down the field. But the defense overall, I think outside of, you know, the yards that Coastal gained against the third and fourth string, you know, we gave up less than 100 yards. And they started piling up some yards on us with the, not the triple option, but the double option. It was really a quarterback read that they ran, and we got burned by the pitch quite a few times on that. But it's just first game stuff. You're playing Coastal. You know, Georgia played Austin Peay, and I watched them, and I just don't know what you can take from these games. They're kind of glorified scrimmages. Unless we're playing Wofford and, you know, beating them by a field goal. But, it'll be two totally different teams on this Saturday than we saw last Saturday, just because of rotations and the type of game that's going to be played. So, you want to talk about this week?
Yeah, let's do it.
You're Mr. National Football Analyst.
Boy.
Georgia, number one, I hate Georgia so much. There was a time years ago that I'd probably tell you that I hated Georgia as much or more than Clemson. So, I work with,
right there with you.
I work with so many Georgia folks, and they're polite, they're kind enough. But Georgia has always been this program the last 20 years, given their recruiting territory, given their tradition, their history, everything that they've had in place, I've always said, why did Georgia never become Alabama? Mm-hmm. You know, why did they not become Florida? Why did they not become LSU? You know, teams that have won national championships over the last 20 years or so. And I think it's probably boiled down to coaching. And there's a great fear now that Kirby Smart is that missing piece. And they've certainly jumped up in the national consciousness in 1 year. I mean, people forget two years ago, they went 7-5, won a bowl game. They were 8-5. Lost to Vanderbilt. I mean, that was just 2 years ago. So basically, making it to the national championship game last year, and I'm not downplaying that at all, plus their just ridiculous recruiting success, all of a sudden, you know, Georgia's up there with Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson, and it's Georgia. I mean, do you, you know, around the office, is that kind of the feeling? Is Georgia now that elite of the elite after last year?
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look, their recruiting class for 2019 is, I believe it's number one, or it was very recently. So, like, I mean, it seems like maybe they're coming for Alabama. I mean, Alabama having the number one recruiting class, like, you know, there are 10-year-old football fans who, I mean, hopefully a 10-year-old football fan isn't following recruiting because – go outside, hang, climb a tree, enjoy right. childhood. But like, they don't know. Supposing that they, you know, follow recruiting, they don't know a time where Alabama hasn't been the number one recruiting class, and Georgia's coming for that throne. And they got close to taking it on the field last year, but came up a little bit short. And you know, Nick Saban's getting pretty old, and it really burns me up more than just about anything that I have to eat crow on it turning out to be the case that Kirby Smart was not an abject failure at Georgia, because I really thought that that's what was going to happen. And through 1 year for him, it kind of was not looking super great. And they were recruiting pretty well even then. But at that point, you could still say, well, you know, Mark Richt recruited well too, and they never really got over the hump in a meaningful way. And so, but I mean, yeah, they're so good. And last year, even with a freshman quarterback replacing a freshman quarterback who is now in danger of being replaced by another freshman quarterback who's even better, like, they are just leveling up year after year. And I mean, you never see the downturn coming one way or another, but right now it's hard to point to any obvious roadblock. You know, I think Will Muschamp would have to level up his program a little bit in terms of the things they're capable of in order to pose a serious threat to Georgia on an ongoing year after year basis. Maybe Florida under Dan Mullen starts looking a little bit more scary, but right now it's just hard to see a whole heck of a lot standing in their way. And It's not even super, like, they weren't even like bad on offense. Like, you maybe would have thought a Saban disciple would have set up his program to be, like, they were good on offense, and they're going to be good on offense again this year, probably. And their offensive line, the offensive line they're building there is just frightening. Just the sheer size of these people before you even factor in the talent. That's a massive concern on a number of levels. And I mean, we could break it down all we want, but at the end of the day, if Georgia's offensive line is just really pushing South Carolina around and they rush for like 300 plus yards, well, that's going to be the ballgame right there.
Yeah. And I heard a comment on the radio today, Chuck Oliver, for those of you who are familiar with Atlanta radio, he said, you know, he said South Carolina is exponentially better than they were 2 years ago. You know, when they went 3-9, or excuse me, 3 years ago, when Will Muschamp took over. Muschamp has done a much better job than I thought he would be able to do in this time frame, and we're so much better. We're such a better program. You know, we've got better players. We've got better coaches. We're so much better than we were 3 years ago. And we still lost ground to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
That's how good Georgia has, has been, is we still lost ground to them.
Yeah.
So it's hard to take being here watching. The good news is they haven't won anything yet. You know, they did win the SEC title last year. You know, have not won that national championship. And the talk on the radio all the time around here is, you know, will it be disappointing if Georgia doesn't win a national championship in the next 3 years? And most of the folks are saying, yes, of course it'll be a disappointment if they don't win a national champion. I mean, look at the momentum that we've got. And so it's going to be interesting to watch, you know, watching our two most hated rivals just become the uber elite in college football is tough. And it, you know, we're doing pretty well, all things considered. South Carolina is doing pretty well. And but it's just painful to watch these folks. So, you know, regarding the game on Saturday, 3:30 kickoff, CBS game, as good as Georgia is, and as much, you know, they're a better program. I tweeted this today. They're a better program. They've got better players. They've got better depth. And anybody who denies that is not paying attention. But I think in a one-game scenario that we're close enough. We're close enough that if they put the ball on the ground a couple of times, you know, if they have nine penalties for 100 yards, if they make mistakes, if they help us a little bit and we play, you know, nobody's going to play a perfect game. We're not going to play a perfect game, but we've got to play to the best of our ability, to the best of our capability. I think we can win the game.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, if you look at, I mean, you don't have to look back to this past weekend, LSU, Miami, FSU, Virginia Tech. I don't think the winners of those games are a whole lot better than the losers, but they just, those are pretty, like, if you look at the box score and you cover up the score and the names, like, you'd have a hard time telling, correctly predicting which team won the game. But you just, if you've got enough talent and you take advantage of mistakes, then you can win a game that should have been, you could win a game that should have been a one score game by two touchdowns, or you could win a game that you should have lost. So yeah, I mean, the frustrating thing for me with the Georgia game last year, and Buck, you've looked at something that I've written but have not yet published on this, so you're early access to my thoughts on this topic. Right. is that, like, last year's game against Georgia was so frustrating because it felt to me that Will Muschamp was just setting out to not lose by too much. I was recently listening to the 2017 Gamecock flashback and reliving the Parker White experience through your voice, and like the fact that, you know, on that opening drive of the game, Kirby Smart calls an onside kick. We recover, and it seems like, oh man, this is great. We're going to score. We're going to get them on the back foot. And then we get inside the Georgia 30, decide not to go for it on fourth and four, and end up, and we send out the true freshman walk-on kicker who has not been good all year. And we just, like, as he's going out to take this kick, everyone on Twitter is like, oh my God, why are we doing this to this poor kid?
Right.
putting him in this position to fail. And then he kind of did what we thought he would. And, well, and opportunity squandered. And so I just, the opportunity is here. Georgia is going to, like, you would, there is still room for them to get better. And I think they are right. Going to keep getting better. And next year it's at Athens. So, like, this is your window to beat Georgia and to kind of have something to take out on the recruiting trail and say, yeah, they're doing this, they're doing that, but, like, we're not so far behind. And if this turns into, like, a 5-year, 6-year streak of losses to Georgia, then that's going to be tough to you know, counterbalance, especially, you know, you're with Clemson right there. As you mentioned, it's tough from an emotional standpoint, but it's also tough from the standpoint of, like, you got to go out there and compete with these teams for the same players. So let's have some balls. Let's go for the jugular and score some points, and, you know, not do this settling for field goals nonsense. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier with the offensive approach against Coastal, but I just feel like we're being gaslit to a degree with all these promises of up tempo, hurry up, no huddle offense.
Right.
We've been that was part of the package that we were sold when Roper came on board, and, you know, we went, you know, 24 games with him or whatever it was and never saw the slightest hint of that. In fact, we were, like, the slowest team in the country across those 2 years. So I,
right,
you know, I This is going to be a big spot for Brian McClendon, and it's going to tell us a lot about whether Muschamp will ever really want to evolve his offense like we keep hearing. So I hope that this is the moment where afterward we're like watching ESPN the day after, and it's all anybody can talk about is how Muschamp and Brian McClendon, they said that they were going to go for it on offense, and they really meant it. And because, I mean, this is a the reason I'm harping on that is because, like, that is the weakness here. If there is a exhaust vent to the Georgia Death Star right now, it is their young, very talented, but young defense. And South Carolina, weird as it is to say, their strength right now is their offense. For as weird as that is to say about a Will Muschamp team. So let's maximize that advantage and go out and get this W.
Yeah, and we didn't see the pace on Saturday against Coastal Carolina, and I don't know if that's by design. And Will Muschamp has said it is we're going to play to the pace that the game dictates. You know, they're not going to go fast all the time. You know, they're not going to go slow all the time. It just depends on the flow of the game and as to how fast they go. They're always going to go to the line of scrimmage fast, but then you'll see them stop, check with the sideline, you know, snap the ball, 13, 15 seconds left, somewhere around there. There's no way they could go as slow as they went last year. So I'm confident that we will definitely increase number of plays and probably increase the amount of time that's on the clock when we're snapping the ball. But we didn't see a lot. We saw it the last minute of the first half when they really went, you know, light speed, and it was super slick and it looked great and resulted in a touchdown. But that's any 2 minute offense. You got a minute on the clock.
Right.
Anybody's going to move that fast. So, we'll see. And how does that type of tempo and pace affect a team, you know, the third ranked team in the country? You know, we know how it affected Coastal Carolina. So it's just a wait and see. Like I said, you can't take a lot from what happened last week. This is the real test, the first big test of the season. So it'll be, you know, hopefully fun to watch. We've certainly got a lot of weapons. But it's, you know, we were 12th in the SEC in offense last year. You know, we're not going to jump to third. We're not, right. You know, if we could finish in the top half of the conference in offense, that'd be a great step forward for this team. So we'll see how it goes Saturday. It'll be interesting game. I know the stadium will be rocking and rolling. I kind of wish it was a night game, but you know, we beat Alabama at 3:30. Let's beat Georgia at 3:30.
That's right.
So
on a very good network that, you know, probably owns some cool companies.
How is CBS? The first CBS game of the year used to not happen until like middle of September. It was because of the U.S. Open. Is that right?
Yes.
So now the U.S. Open is on ESPN. So that's they had a 3:30 game last Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So I think that's why. So we usually didn't. We played Georgia early, but it was never the CBS game because CBS didn't have a game until later.
That's right.
You know,
I've been noticing people talking about tennis on my timeline at weird hours of the night lately. So I guess that's why.
I always thought the U.S. Open was over, you know, right after Labor Day. Seems like it's stretching out a bit here. But one other final comment about Georgia and South Carolina. I've seen a lot of folks talking about how, well, you know, we stayed with Georgia last year, and you and I texted about this a little bit. You know, South Carolina was down 14-7 at the half, 21-10 going into the fourth quarter. And normally, you know, 11 points, you would consider that a fourth quarter game, you know, being within two scores. But when you go back and look at the statistics from that game, we never had a chance. I mean, they doubled us up in first downs. They doubled us up in total yards. Time of possession was almost doubled up. I think it was 39 to 21, something like that. And, you know, the stat that really stood out to me was on third down. And I vaguely remember being super frustrated with this last year. They were 8 out of 13 on third down and 1 out of 1 on fourth down. So 9 out of 14 when South Carolina had a chance to get the defense off the field. And that's what won that game for Georgia last year. So so if you're thinking, well, Georgia lost all these players and we played them close last year and we're better and we're at home, that's why we should win. That game last year really wasn't close, folks.
No. It really wasn't. Bill Connolly at SB Nation has these advanced stat profiles and just kind of like looking at the quality of the performance to as kind of like a predictor of, you know, how many times out of 100 you would win that game if you like caught some lucky breaks or didn't catch some lucky breaks. And this was the only game last year that South Carolina, based on the caliber of its performance, had a 0% chance of winning.
Zero chance of winning. So you hear statistics lie. This is one where the final score lied. The final score lied to you.
Yeah, so. The final score is a stat. So
right.
Important to remember that.
Yeah. So, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. It was really not a great weekend of college football. Probably the best moment of the weekend was Appalachian State almost beating Penn State, which is not nearly as good as Appalachian State actually beating Penn State.
No.
You know, that would have been fantastic and something we'd still be talking about, but they didn't. You know, the marquee games, Auburn and Washington, the little bit I watched of that game, it was pretty sloppy. I don't know that either team looked great. Miami getting thrashed pretty good. You had Florida State getting thrashed pretty good on Labor Day night. I nothing particularly shocking, but just some teams probably not performing up to par based on their reputation. Although I don't know what reputation Miami has anymore.
I think Miami was probably considerably overhyped entering the season. As awesome as the turnover chain was last year and all that, like forcing turnovers isn't a super repeatable skill. So like kind of expecting that to be a part of their identity year in and year out. And I know Manny Diaz's defenses like to force the issue and force the opponent to make some mistakes. But like the fact of the matter is that when a fumble lands on the ground, like there are, you have like a 50% chance of being the team that picks it up. And Miami just ran really hot last year on things like that. So coming into this one, I mean, number 8 overall in the country, I think, is where they were ranked. And I thought that was a bit much with as bad as Malik Rozier was down the stretch last year and continued to be on, was it Sunday night? So I didn't see the outcome of that being LSU having such a convincing win. And I think probably what's going to happen now is the LSU hype is probably going to get a little out of control.
Right.
It's this weird thing because I was kind of not really understanding why people were so negative on LSU. And now I've like flipped to like, all right, like I was high on LSU, but come on.
calm down, everybody.
Yeah.
No, they looked, you know, that's another team. I was, you know, referencing back to the South Carolina Georgia game. I don't think we can win the SEC if we lose on Saturday. But I think Georgia certainly can if they lose on Saturday. And the only real roadblocks for Georgia after us would be LSU on the road, and then they have Auburn at home late in the year. So if we lose to Georgia, they would probably have to lose both of those games, and we would have to win out. Whereas, you know, Georgia's road is much easier than ours overall, because we're more likely to drop a game, you know, to a Missouri or a Kentucky or somebody like that.
Even that, I think we play at Ole Miss and at Florida in consecutive weeks, and that is going to be a difficult stretch. It's a tough time to catch Florida, because I feel like Dan Mullen is going to have that program turned around in a hurry. I just really think he's the answer that they've been missing, and it's not going to take him long to get them in gear. And Ole Miss, we saw it on Saturday with how explosive they were against Texas Tech, which admittedly we've been hearing for years and years that, okay, so this is the year that Texas Tech is actually going to start getting better on defense, and it never quite comes. And we're told that again this year, and Ole Miss has a very good offense. Jordan Tamu is a very good quarterback, but it seems like Texas Tech has a bad defense again. But anyway, long-winded way of saying Ole Miss, with all the probation and everything, I think people are kind of writing that off as like a fun trip to the Grove, and we won't have to worry about the game because Ole Miss is terrible. But I had that not penciled in as a loss, but if you wanted my prediction on what that would be entering the season, I would have had that one as a loss. So yeah, to your original point, much tougher road for South Carolina, even if they win this game, compared to Georgia, for sure.
Yeah. Ole Miss is it's shocking to me how good they are after everything they've been through, and maybe, you know, maybe we'll see the fall off next year when all of this wide receiving core goes to the NFL.
I think it'll be like with US or Southern Cal and Penn State, where you kind of saw where you like several years down the road, like they were hyped up going into a year, but ended up falling short, and it turned out that they had some like depth issues that you weren't really thinking about because of sanctions a few years gone by. So maybe that'll be where you see it. But anyway.
Yeah. And when they roll off of our schedule, I'm sure. I was thinking Alabama's got to be coming up soon. I mean, we haven't played Alabama. Is 2010 the last time we played Alabama?
Yep.
They got to be rolling on soon. Do we? Maybe as early as next year.
The way the new scheduling format is it's like you play teams from the West who aren't your cross division rival like once every 24 years insanity. So
yeah, I remember. I don't think we get Auburn again until like 2022 or something like that.
So. You might have seen your last South Carolina Alabama game, Buck.
Right. I don't have much time left. All right. Well, let's wrap it up there. Connor, thank you very much for joining TRC Unleashed. Looking forward to the game on Saturday and maybe looking forward to some more podcasts this season. So hope you enjoyed tonight. We appreciate you joining us, and good luck on Saturday. Go Cox.
All right. That was fun.